President Trump signs more executive orders today, one rolling back the Dodd-Frank banking restrictions put in place after the 2008 financial crisis. Wags are circulating a tweet Trump sent out in 2012 asking, "Why is Barack Obama constantly issuing executive orders, making power grabs of authority?"
There's also a new Supreme Court nominee this week and much more to talk about in our Friday roundtable. And joining us today is Maria Elena Salinas, Univision News anchor. Hi, Maria Elena.
Hello, and nice to talk to you, like always.
Great to have you. And Domenico Montanaro, NPR politics editor, is with us as well. Hi, Domenico.
Hey there.
And Domenico, how do you think that the Trump presidency is going so far? We're 2 weeks in. So much has happened already.
Wow. It really has. 14 days of this, and it is some rocky waters. I mean, Donald Trump is trying to follow through on the promises that he made, some of the biggest promises he made during the campaign. You know, a lot of people talked about that border wall with Mexico. He said that he wants to try to get that built. He put an executive order out on that. He talked about the Muslim ban, which he's not calling a Muslim ban anymore, but does ban people from seven majority Muslim countries. So for all the people who said that we shouldn't take Trump literally but take him seriously, I think we really should and have done both.
Well, what about places where his voters might say he's fallen behind on his promises? I'm thinking of Obamacare and the phrase, "We're going to repeal Obamacare." And now you have Tennessee Senator Lamar Alexander saying it's more accurate to say repair Obamacare. So, Maria Elena, what does that signal?
Well, one of the things that surprises me the most is that Republicans have been trying for years now to repeal Obamacare. And it surprises me that they didn't already have something ready to replace it, that now they're struggling trying to figure out how to do that. And this is probably one of those things where Trump didn't know either how to replace it and is relying on Congress to do it, to do that job for them. Yeah. So, you know, it looks like a lot of Trump supporters are still supporting him, but then there's others that are having second thoughts and wondering, why did I vote for him?
One of the big pieces of news this week was the Supreme Court nomination of Neil Gorsuch, Judge Neil Gorsuch. And there's a question about whether Senate Republicans will pull the nuclear option where they would change the rules in the Senate to require fewer votes to confirm Gorsuch, fewer than the 60 that are typically done for Supreme Court nominees. Trump told them to do that. Here he is.
But if we end up with that gridlock, I would say, if you can, Mitch, go nuclear, because that would be an absolute shame if a man of this quality was caught up in the web. So I would say it's up to Mitch, but I would say go for it. Okay?
He's talking about Mitch McConnell, the Senate Majority Leader. Domenico, Democrats in a bind here trying to figure out what to do, whether to fight Neil Gorsuch and have the rules changed so that it only requires a majority, or try to hold their fire for the next one.
Well, what's interesting here is that, you know, we were talking a minute ago about whether or not Trump supporters would be disappointed. I think there's almost no reason for Trump supporters to be disappointed. Things that we've heard from them have been that they are completely in backing Donald Trump. They love that he has shaken up the rules.
Especially in this nomination.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And this nomination, it delivers on something that he had promised. He promised a list of people who would be conservative for those folks who didn't like Donald Trump's moral values, et cetera. But, you know, when it comes to Democrats, on the other hand, they are being pressured, facing huge political pressure from the left. And this is not in Democrats' DNA to sort of shut government down, to stop things from happening. They want to be able to govern. And also, you know, they also understand the political reality here. They may be able to stop Neil Gorsuch and get an eye for a Garland eye. You know, Merrick Garland was the person who was Barack Obama's pick who was stopped by Republicans. They could do that. They could push Neil Gorsuch to the side. But to what end? The Republicans, if they get rid of the filibuster after that, could get through as conservative a pick, if not more conservative, and have only 51 votes needed for the next one, if and when there is a next one.
And what about the front of the administration, you know, the front, the public face, if you will. How's the messaging going? We're thinking of Kellyanne Conway, who launched a Twitter storm when she referenced the Bowling Green massacre that was underreported. Well, that's because it didn't happen. There were two Iraqis who were jailed, one for life from Bowling Green, for sending money to Iraqi insurgents. But there was There was no massacre. And Conway said today that she meant to say Bowling Green terrorists. And people, I'm looking online, sure. People have always put up, there's now a Bowling Green massacre fund for the victims of the Bowling Green massacre that did not happen. But the Esquire headline is, the Bowling Green massacre is fake. Mentally ill Americans getting easier access to guns is real. They're referring to Republicans repealing a rule that would make it harder for the mentally ill to get guns. Now it will be easier. You know, how is the sort of the face of the administration doing with missteps like that? And how about, you know, are we maybe looking at the wrong things?
Well, look, I think that as far as the Bowling Green massacre goes, that quote unquote, that didn't happen. You know, it's very easy for people to pile on what Kellyanne Conway was saying and doing there. And there's no question she was wrong in the scope of what she was saying, but it doesn't matter to Trump supporters. You know, it's not something that they are going to latch on to. It's something that, frankly, liberals are fired up about. But I do think the real thing here is that the messaging, not only just the messaging, but the rollout, the management of that visa ban, for example, that was problematic. There were a lot of questions, not only internally within the United States, with Republicans questioning whether or not this administration knows how to govern or is capable of governing. And then with relationships around the world, there were a lot of people scratching their heads and questioning the competence of this government by the way that was rolled out. Mike Pence went to Capitol Hill yesterday and basically said, we learned our lesson.
If I can add to that, yeah. I think it's interesting how the administration is constantly attacking the media and saying, you know, we're responsible for fake news. Yet you're getting all these alternative facts from his supporters and from his surrogates and from pundits that support him on television. And, you know, where's the truth? And that is a serious problem. I'm very, very concerned because one of the first things that you see in an authoritarian government is trying to suppress in trying to undermine the media, trying to limit the freedom of the press. So we have out there a population that is ill-informed, and that actually makes them not ignorant but also vulnerable to lies. Nobody knows what to believe anymore.
Maria Elena, I want to ask you how this whole back and forth with Mexico is playing out, especially among Latinos in the United States. Trump with some tough words, talking about bad hombres. How's this all playing out?
Well, this whole thing, as you know, the White House and Los Pinos in Mexico, the Mexican government, have denied that he threatened to send troops. But it seems like there's also some sources that are saying, well, he didn't necessarily threaten. He kind of offered, and it was sort of like a joke. But, you know, in an interview with our Enrique Acevedo, the foreign minister of Mexico, Videgaray, said that decisions that are made in the next few months will mark U.S.-Mexico relations for decades to come. So while Mexicans are proud people, you know, they're also pragmatic, and they realize that you can't alienate yourself from your neighbor. So they have to do this juggling act to preserve their dignity at home while also finding some kind of common ground with the new administration in the U.S. They have no choice.
Because of important things like trade. I want to ask you, sticking with the tough phone call with the Mexican president and also with the Australian prime minister, what about the leaking of some of this, Domenico? Persistent leaks, executive orders about those tough phone calls. You know, some have said that it's long-time workers inside the White House, inside the administration, who've worked for, you know, two parties who are sort of making these SOS calls to the media. Do you believe that?
Well, I don't know who the leaks are coming from. None of them have come through NPR in our reporting. But I will say that it does reflect a certain level of concern within those in the government who have been within the government or those who are within Trump's administration and who didn't exactly think that some of the actions that the president took were necessarily the right ones to take and that it raised some flags for them. There's also a way to look at it where one way to communicate with Trump when you're in the White House and the advice that you've given him has maybe been pushed aside is to be quoted in the media or seen on TV. And that's one way to get to the principal to let him know what your dissent is and that maybe he should curtail some of his actions.
Maria Elena, just about 30 seconds left here, but we saw Donald Trump with some business leaders today. We were talking at the top about he wants to roll back some of the financial regulations that went in after the 2008 collapse. How's that going to play with for a guy who ran as a populist? I mean, are ordinary Americans going to like seeing him with all these Wall Street people and doing things that they love?
Well, you know, the answer to that is easy. Trump supporters will support anything he does, and his opponents will criticize it. But what happened to accusing Hillary of being too close to Wall Street? Now he is getting close to Wall Street. Sooner or later, I think people are going to start, you know, realizing what's going on and that he's picking and choosing the promises that he wants to keep. And, you know, we'll see if that 42% that support him now will continue supporting him or that number will go down.
On the other hand, his supporters are saying this is what they want to see. That's where they want to be. They want to be in that room. Maria Elena Salinas, Univision News anchor, Domenico Montanaro, NPR Politics editor. Great as always. Thank you.
Thank you.
You're welcome.